released in The Guardian from another research assistant, Adrian. He took 500 carbon offset projects and tried to classify them on where they line out. And they said that 78% of them are categorized likely as junk, which means they result to no reduction of emissions. There's no that they're worthless due to one or more fundamental failings that undermine the promised emission cuts. 16% of that looked problematic, with evidence suggesting that they may have at least one fundamental failing and are potentially junk. And the rest of the 6% that was left over, there wasn't enough information being provided to make an evaluation of that. And that's just really where we are when it comes to carbon markets. Carbon markets are a false solution. They're a distraction. It's a false sense of hope. And there is many EJ communities across the United States and globally that support net zero targets and support carbon offset projects. And we, as the people that are on the ground, a grassroots community, must hold these EJ communities accountable. We must hold these big EJ orgs like the Sierra Club and other ones to let them know that the grassroots community, the frontline community, will not be a part of an organization that allows these false solutions to continue to move forward.
And we'll have to leave it there for today's episode of Coast Range Radio. You can listen to the entire Indigenous Environmental Network presentation by searching for Coast Range Radio on any podcast app or at our website, coastrange.org. You can find links to learn more about everything we discussed today and more in the show notes of the podcast. One more huge thanks to all of the presenters, organizers, and activists who came out in support of this effort. My email is michael@coastrange.org. Please get in touch with any questions or ideas. And thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Join me, Melissa Lesniak, creator and host of That Vegan Show, on Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m. as I interview Kayla and Ashlyn, founders of Little Critter Crew Small Animal Rescue. We are also joined by an active volunteer, Sarah. We will learn all about the mission of the Little Critter Crew and the animals they rescue, which are many. Bunnies, chinchillas, gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, hedgehogs, mice, rats, and sugar gliders, and sometimes kittens and geckos. So don't miss That Vegan Show, Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m., only on KBOO.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Queery. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
It's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Queery every third Saturday at 10 p.m.
The things we could do, oh, it takes my breath away.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And I lose control, think I follow home.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Tonight, our guests are Tammy Carpenter, a physician and Beaverton School Board member, along with Claire Renault, a French teacher, and Ellen, a Spanish immersion teacher. Both are activists in the Beaverton Education Association. Welcome, Tammy, Claire, and Ellen.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Hey, great to be here.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks so much for taking the time.
We brought you three on the program to talk about the controversy that has emerged in the Beaverton School District a controversy about free speech, academic freedom, and what we in the movement like to call the Palestine exception. As Palestine solidarity mobilizations have grown in the last 2 years, in opposition to Israel's genocide, ethnic cleansing, apartheid, and settler colonial occupation, the pro-Israel Zionist forces, both in government, corporate, and school boards, have launched all methods of repression. Tammy has been the target of such persecution recently. And in a related attack, the teachers' union, the BEA, the Beaverton Education Association, has come under heavy fire for hosting a workshop for educators called Teaching Palestine. Let's start with the BEA workshop. The Teaching Palestine Lessons, Stories, Voices workshop was meant to offer a defense of Palestinian humanity, centering Palestinian lives, uplifting and celebrating Palestinian struggle for justice, and critiquing racism and inequality. Claire and Ellen, please explain how the Teaching Palestine workshop came to the BEA, where it comes from, what was discussed, and how it was received by Beaverton educators.
I can speak to that. So the Teaching Palestine book is a publication from Rethinking Schools. And I don't know if you all know, but Rethinking Schools hosts the Northwest Teaching for Social Justice Conference every year. So I am involved in that conference. And when this past October it was hosted in Seattle, Bill Bigelow, who's one of the organizers and who does a lot of great social justice education work, connected with me and told me, hey, this book is about to come out and we would love to share it with all the locals. And so I said, yes, I would love to have you come and speak at BEA about it.
Ellen is the mastermind behind that workshop and did like 90% of the heavy lifting for that workshop. I was just a supporter and it was really powerful for a lot of our teachers who feel like we've been told to stay away from the topic. So I was happy to support in any way I could. She was the glue and the gears behind all of it.
So the BEA was criticized in local media, quoting parents and groups such as the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, saying that the workshop was one-sided and biased. Some called the workshop anti-Semitic, making Jewish students feel unsafe, and that is teaching students how to pray in the Muslim faith. Can you respond to these criticisms, Claire and Ellen?
So I'm happy to respond to the claims that were made by a school board member to the Beaverton Valley Times in an op-ed. My umbrage was with the lying, really, about the event and the intent of the event. And I understand that sensitive topics are always going to be perceived by different audiences in different ways. And that's okay. And everybody has a right to their opinion. They don't have to support us. They don't have to be thrilled about what we're doing. But to intentionally mislead the public to serve an agenda is just twisted and not okay. So after I had seen that op-ed published in the Beaverton Valley Times, that was put out there by Beaverton Education, by the Beaverton School District's school board member, Susan Greenberg, I had to address the lies that were there, and I wrote to the editor who thought it was okay to publish those without fact-checking. And I asked that the lies be redacted or edited, but not for the op-ed to be removed. It has since been removed, I'm not sure why, from the website, even on the Wayback Machine, which archives internet articles, does not have evidence of it being there anymore, which is very, very strange and suspicious. I think that is my biggest issue, is that the lies were put out there. it hurt our Muslim and Palestinian families, many of whom have lost many family members in Gaza in this war that is happening right now. And it just goes to show that if you have the power and you have the connections, you can cause harm and also not be held accountable for the harm that you cause. And the people who have less power will continue to struggle and be harmed. So that was my biggest issue with that in particular.
Yeah, and I can jump in. And of course, the Zionists want to make it sound like the workshop was one-sided and biased, but it was really just very informative. And a lot of different people who had never been really actively involved in the union before came out for this because they were so excited that the union was finally hosting something to address the elephant that had been in the room for a while, right? Which was the need for educators to be supported in teaching the truth in this climate. So it was received really well by the educators that were there. And Zionists are always going to say that it's attacking Jewish people, right?
I have to ask again about this. This is the thing that jumped out at me. Teaching students how to pray in the Muslim faith.
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure where that came from. It's not in the book by Bill Bigelow. It wasn't presented in the workshop. I did have to leave a few minutes early to pick up my son from track practice, but I conferred with others. That was definitely not mentioned. So it's very interesting that a school board member would put that out there without fact checking. And they obviously got their information from another source who had misinterpreted that information. The op-ed had cited some previously used materials by PAT in Portland, and those have since been removed. Another claim by the op-ed had said that we were using materials that were rejected by the Portland Public School District. But that's impossible because those materials had been put out there the year before, and Bill Bigelow's book was only published in February of 2025. So unless, we're in Back to the Future, I don't see how one could believe those claims.
The praying and teaching kids how to pray in the Muslim faith was everywhere. It was in the Oregonian, it was in Millennium of the Week, it was like... Lies. Say them enough, and they just keep living.
It was incredibly Islamophobic. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of the initiatives to protect teacher voices have come from members, not necessarily union leadership. And I do know that because of the controversy that there has been a lot of talk of, like, well, we understand that our Jewish families who are speaking up are really, scared about the information that was presented in this workshop, but it's based on things that weren't true. There were also a lot of Zionists present. Would you say about like 8 to 10, maybe, Ellen?
In the workshop?
In the workshop, or fewer.
I wasn't sure how many. There were really only two that were speaking up.
That were speaking up, very much so, yeah. And the ones that were speaking up weren't necessarily there to learn. It seemed like, because of generational trauma and because of the current situation in Israel and, October 7th, they are really dysregulated and scared. And I think that's where they're operating from, and weren't necessarily there to learn, but to defend and protect. But that did end up causing a lot of harm to especially our Muslim and Palestinian educators who were there to find camaraderie and to find some kind of alliance with other people who were willing to learn their history and embrace their culture and to incorporate it into their lessons, very much like the celebration of Hanukkah in some families. You know, we don't necessarily teach how to light the candles, or if it's Rosh Hashanah, you know, what you do to have a Seder. We don't do that in school, but we acknowledge it. And it was just supposed to be a really lovely way to incorporate Palestinian history and to make it a part of the story, to elevate it. Unfortunately, people's fears and people's reactions to the current war and a desire to protect really caused a lot of harm to our Palestinian and Muslim educators, because they feel like when we both sides everything, like school districts, like the Beaverton School District and honestly, BEA, our union has done, it makes them want to go quiet again, because when they speak up, it's seen as a problem, and it's something that they have to fix. And now they have to spend time on it. And I think educators like Ellen and myself, we don't want people to feel like a burden. We want them to feel proud of who they are and to feel like they're celebrated, that they're embraced, and that they are an important and integral part of our culture here in Beaverton.
Yeah, is it okay if I add to, I think it's interesting that the Oregonian loves to quote, like, you know, a Jewish person said that they feel unsafe, and yet they somehow never quote the many Jewish people who are saying, hey, stop using Jewish people as a weapon against Palestinian liberation. And in the BEA workshop as well, there was somebody from Rethinking Schools who spoke up and was like, it's actually very anti-Semitic to assume that all Jewish people support Israel and are against, you know, just speaking about Palestine and Palestinian history and humanity. So I think that's really, really important to keep in mind, because of how many media sources try to make Jewish voices sound like a pro-Israel monolith.
And I think it's worth mentioning as well that many Palestinians are Semitic. So if we can parse words, if we really want to get technical about it and use the definitions correctly, a lot of the arguments against this workshop and against elevating Palestinian voices really holds no water.
Okay, well, let's move on to the attacks on Tammy Carpenter. The Beaverton School Board received numerous complaints, especially from Bob Horenstein, Chief Community Relations and Public Affairs Officer for the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, calling your posts, Tammy, hateful rhetoric, creating a hostile environment, crossing the line into outright anti-Semitism, causing Jewish students and families to feel marginalized, alienated, and unsafe. What have you been posting, and what is your response to these accusations?
Well, thank you, Jamie. So beginning with the first hospital bombing in October of 2023, I've posted to my personal social media account my strong opposition to the war on the people of Gaza. And I felt like as a physician and as a mom, I couldn't stay silent. And because I have followed this colonial project for years, I was very concerned. I know a lot of us were very concerned early on that this attack on Hamas could be used as an opportunity by the Israeli government to complete the work it started in 1948 and of course advanced in 1967 and 1982. And since October of 2023, I have continued to stand with humanitarians across the metro area, across the region, across the world, to demand an end to what all respected experts in the field now call a genocide. And you use the phrase hateful rhetoric, and I think that was part of the formal complaints. What is hateful rhetoric to me is the Israeli government calling the people of Gaza human animals. What is hateful rhetoric to me is the government of Israel promising to level Gaza. What is hateful rhetoric to me is slandering the people who are standing against the genocide as anti-Semitic. So that's how I've been showing up on social media. But I also do want to push back on the idea that the students in our district feel, quote, unsafe with my humanitarian stance. And I know that's a word that is used a lot. But what I believe they feel is uncomfortable uncomfortable with the dissonance between the horror that they see on their own phones that is inconsistent with the Hasbara that they've been taught their entire lives. And that isn't to say that anti-Semitism isn't on the rise. I think we all know that it clearly is. But I believe it is on the rise because of the continued support of the genocide by our government, and that the violence that has taken place against our Jewish neighbors here in the U.S. has been stochastic terrorism. Political violence directed at Jews for their perceived complicity in the violence in Palestine. And because I want our Jewish friends and neighbors to be safe, because I want our Palestinian and Muslim friends and neighbors to be safe, I'm working along with so many others to end U.S. support for this genocide.
That's beautiful to hear, Tammy. Well, the school board voted 5-2 to hire an outside investigator to determine whether you, Tammy, merit censure for creating a hostile environment for students through your so-called anti-Israel activism on social media. And at the following board meeting on June 2nd, a rally organized by the Democratic Socialists of America and many speakers under public comment blasted the directors for their assault on free speech and Palestinian humanity. Can you describe what happened?
I can try. I don't claim to fully understand how and why we got into this situation. But I will say that I was pretty surprised when my colleagues decided to approve an investigation by a third party into my social media posts. I do have lots of process questions that that shook out from this, you know, occurrence, and I hope that we can address as a board going forward. Like, no one knew the meeting was happening, and I didn't even know the context of the complaints until we were in executive session. Anyway, so after the meeting, word got out, and I started hearing from so many people offering support. Folks from DSA were among the many people who reached out, and somehow from Friday morning after the Thursday evening meeting to Monday early evening, the DSA chapter in Portland and the Washington County DSA branch, shout out my WashCo homies, mobilized 150, 200 people, I don't know, a lot of people to show up for me. And when I say show up for me, I mean, yes, show up for Tammy. But I also mean it as, you know, show up for free speech. And I also mean it as show up for this free speech. The speech that has been silenced, that has silenced so many people across the country, from our esteemed universities in the East to right here at PSU. The speech that has scared the government so bad that they've snatched up activists. The speech that scares our elected leaders to do so much that they dare not utter the word genocide, lest AIPAC come for them. And that's why the rally was really important. I think our neighbors here in Washington County needed to see up close what we mean by silencing. And I think this brought it home for a lot of people not paying close attention.
You want to tell our listeners what AIPAC is?
So AIPAC is the American Israeli Political Action Committee. I think a lot of folks are curious about how and why they're allowed to spend in our political races. It is very curious to me. As far as I know, they aren't registered as a foreign agent for the government of Israel, and yet they continue to show up in that way. So some curiosity there. And we have seen across the country and even here in the Portland metro area how AIPAC will dump tens of thousands, millions of dollars into races that they really want to usually prevent the candidate of the left that is supporting humanitarianism, that is supporting wanting all the good things, and not necessarily just like supporting Israel. And we saw this with Jayapal running last primary, where AIPAC dumped tons of money in to her opponent's coffers to defeat Jayapal. And I don't know that they cared so very much about Dr. Dexter and whether or not she was going to win. They cared very deeply that Jayapal was going to lose. So I understand why our elected leaders are afraid of AIPAC. We have seen the damage they've done, you know, and, you know, most notably, you know, at the federal level, we saw Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman go down because of AIPAC money. And so I totally get the fear. And yet, if we continue to cower in fear and not say the thing, we're not standing up for humanity if we are not willing to be brave. And so, yes, AIPAC is big and scary. And we are stronger than them, and we just need to figure out how we can organize and mobilize the people to stand up against them.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. We've been listening to Tammy Carpenter, Beaverton School Board member, Claire Renault, and Ellen, Beaverton Education Association activists. If you find this useful, consider supporting KBOO, non-corporate community-sponsored, listener-supported radio, and go to our website, kboo.fm, and make a donation.
How would you all encourage our listeners to get involved, either through their labor unions or in other ways?
Thanks, Laura. I think that's a really important thing to cover, maybe the most important thing that we'll talk about right now. And I feel like it is time for us to get off of our couches and into the actual work of making this a better place for everyone. From my perspective, you know, as a knowledge worker, first as an engineer and then as a physician, I've never had the opportunity to be a part of a union, and I know that's shifting. So for me, my activism has come through the DSA. I was just overwhelmed with the ability of the organization to respond to what was happening to me. And we are recording this on Tuesday morning, June 17th. And within the span of 12 hours, starting yesterday afternoon until a Washington County Board of Commissioners meeting today at 10 a.m., the DSA has mobilized people to both write letters to the county commissioners and to show up to their in-person meeting to demand that they fight for DEI against these Trump executive orders. And we have to be a part of something, part of your union, part of DSA, part of some organization that is actually doing the work is what we need to be doing right now. So if anyone out there isn't in a union, see if you can organize a union. If you're in a union, take it over and make it better. And if none of that is possible, find the organization that fits you. Come join us in the DSA.
So within my union, I am so grateful for getting tapped to be a Cat Zone captain by my current union leadership in BEA. And through a few trainings, I learned how to organize, and I felt really empowered by that knowledge. And I think up until that point, I had kind of felt like, oh, well, other leaders know more than I do. So I'm just going to let them do the work, and I'll just kind of stay tuned. And then in my conversations, I was like, oh, really? Everybody's trying to figure it out. You know, we're all not experts, but, you know, we're here to learn. And I thought, oh, well, I'm capable of way more, and the information is there. And so it's been really inspiring to join the DSA and to connect with other union members, not just in my union, but in unions across the state and in different industries. Labor Notes, I've attended a few of their sessions online, and they have been really instrumental in very quick, very short, very affordable or free if you need assistance teach about organizing, to teach about running for elections, to teach about your rights, to talk about different types of unions and organizing. I think another thing to take note of is if you are not in a current union because your establishment doesn't have one, you don't necessarily need to start something from scratch. And some unions are open to accepting members in other sectors. And so, you know, for example, if you're a nurse, you know, and you're
establishment, this is a very poor example, but like if you work in at a hospital, for example, and you don't have a union for your type of work, sometimes other unions, which seem like they might have nothing to do with your line of work, will accept you as a member so that you get some of the same protections. You might not have the same bargaining rights, but you can join a different union and you'll have access to their resources and their knowledge base. Well, in the past few weeks, we've had a few things come up in our union that seem very undemocratic, but it's in our bylaws, and we haven't necessarily encountered situations like we've had in the past year where so many people have left their positions and they've been filled by appointees. And currently we have 5 out of 14 people on our e-board who are appointed. You know, over the past few weeks, a few other union members and I, we've rallied together to try to question this process. And we have applied to be on the bylaws committee in our union. We have people who have applied to be on the budget committee as well. And there's still, you know, some questions in the air because currently the president needs to appoint people to these committees. So it doesn't feel super democratic, but there's hope. And we're learning about the different ways that we can organize. And we're asking questions of people who are in other teachers' unions and looking at their bylaws and saying, how do things work over there? Does that work? Did it bomb? Since we've decided to organize within our own union, it has been so heartening to find out through DSA's educator group that people are just willing to drop almost everything and talk to us immediately and give us some advice. We just recently had a social with members of a caucus in North Clackamas. Yesterday, I just met with a couple of leaders who are board directors in Salem Kaiser. And we're just sharing ideas and pumping each other up. We need hype people around us. So I would recommend just reaching out to other unions, not necessarily the ones in your area. Join the DSA. If you're an educator, go to the DSA Educators Meetup. You're not alone. You might feel like the weirdo in the room where everyone's rolling their eyes at you. But there are other people out there just like you. And they're willing to do the work with you.
Yeah, find the people that will have people's eyes rolled at you together or something. I don't know. Like Claire and I get people's eyes rolled at us together a lot, I think, lately, and it's been nice. I would say, just like y'all said, like unionize, you know, join your union,